정말 빨리 해야 돼.
Welcome to Top Shelf at the Merrick Library with your host, Carol Ann Tack. Welcome to Top Shelf at Merrick Library. I am your host, Carol Ann Tack, and thank you all for joining me. Okay, so for me, it all started with a book called The Revised Fundamentals of Caregiving, written by today's guest, the amazing Jonathan Evason. And then came This Is Your Life, Harriet Chance. And then I can't stop thinking about Mike Munoz from Lawn Boy. Then Legends of the North Cascades came in. And just as I was about to go back and reread West of Here, I receive an advanced copy of today's book, Small World, by today's guest, Jonathan Evason. And honestly, this whole episode will really be about me trying to keep it together. So Jonathan Evason, thank you so much for joining me, the listeners, and the patrons of Merrick Library's Top Shelf podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. Man, I love the enthusiasm.
You make it pretty easy. Thank you for being here and for all of your support of libraries. Merrick Library has your books on our shelves, all of them in various versions, large type, audiobook. And I must thank you for your letter to librarians everywhere. I'm not going to lie. I got choked up reading about the library experience for little Johnny Evason. Can you share a little bit of that with our listeners?
Librarians. Now, this is the 70s where like every librarian was a woman and they had the, you know, translucent stock, you know, legs or whatever. And they were my sisters of mercy, I swear. I mean, I was a little latchkey kid. My mom worked two jobs. And so, I mean, I spent a lot of time in the library eating moldy saltines and, you know, soft apples and, you know, trailing crumbs all over the place, napping on the quilted sofas and just having my world open up and really just escaping. And I was a precocious little autodidact, thanks in large part to librarians. And the library to me is like the ultimate American institution. I mean, it's the only thing, like Mike says in Lawn Boy, it's the only thing in the whole culture that says to a little kid that doesn't have any money or whatever, that's wearing the same winter coat for 3 years, that look, man, everything on the shelves, it's yours for free. All you need is this little card. And it's the ultimate egalitarian institution. So I get choked up too. So,
oh my goodness. I have chills. That is so beautiful and is so kind. And as you say in your letter, onward. So let's talk about Small World. It has accolades everywhere, justly deserved. You've got this amazing quote from Jason Mott, who's the National Book Award winner. But I love what Jamie Ford says. Jamie Ford calls Small World a big-hearted, sprawling, blue-collar novel. It's a Dickensian saga on a grand American scale. Whoa, talk about an elevator pitch. You don't need to say anything else.
Yeah, well, that was my MO for the book, and he pretty much stated it better than I could have.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, no. I know, that is the greatest blurb ever. Like, I've blurbed a lot of books and I try to be kind and, you know, I try to say, but like that one was a little, it was pretty poetic itself. The thing about it burning in your veins all night, like kerosene,
oh,
you know,
God.
Kerosene, 19th. That was a good one. I owe Jamie a lot of beers for that one. He's such a great guy too.
And so having said that, I don't even know how to follow up, but would you please tell listeners what Small World is about?
Well, I mean, really, I wanted to write this big Dickensian American saga. I wanted to do kind of a State of the Union address on the American dream and explore the injustices that our nation was built on, but at the same time, try to celebrate the diversity, which is, you know, now sort of devolved into a sort of tribalism. But I wanted it to be a big entertaining novel. I didn't want to be so topical that it was like a political polemic, but I wanted to speak to the present moment and how we got here in a way that was critical, but not, like I said, not trying to edify so people or educate them or change their worldview or anything. I just wanted them to take a look at our history through the lenses of all these individual characters and see how we, even though we live in these divisive times, we are just all in this thing together. We all built it together. We're all in it together. You talk about the history of this nation and the mythos tends to be that it's just all about immigrants. And, you know, let's not forget that every bit as much. It's about the people who were here before us and the people who were brought here against their will. All of these elements, you know, and we've built it on some faulty premises that were not altogether without virtue idealistically, but realistically, it's time we all just accept the fact that, you know, our nation was built on free and exploitive labor, for instance.
It's 170 years of American history. It's huge, glorious, frightening, hopeful. It's an inspirational story. I mean, how many adjectives did I just drop there?
But I don't know. Keep going. It's pub day. I need to hear this.
I'll make it a ringtone for you.
Thanks.
And full disclosure, I did have to slow myself down so that I didn't read Small World too quickly. But there are parts in this book, the Layla Tully storyline, George Flowers, Walter's storyline, Wu Chen's. I mean, it's impossible for me to narrow this down. And then with all of this, you have the rails connecting not just the coasts, but connecting the characters. I'm getting chills as I say that because I don't know what alchemy you employed to bring all of this together. And I don't know how long it took you to write, but man.
The book took 14 months to write. I was pretty inspired. I sort of hatched the idea on the eve of my 50th birthday. I was, I really wanted to, you know, turning 50 kind of lit a fire under my butt. I really wanted to swing for the fences. Nothing against my last few novels, which I love, but they were not without their literary pyrotechnics and challenges and stuff. But I really wanted to go back to return to something like West of Here, which was I like a high stakes game, you know. I wanted to try to write a book that if I failed, it could ruin my career, you know. That's the stakes I wanted. I wanted the ball with 2 seconds on the clock, and I really wanted to have to develop tools as I went along. And you know, I actually cut 7 or 8 characters out of the book, some of my favorites, but they just weren't serving the overall vision as well as they could have. It's really hard to kill your darlings, but at the end of the day, I needed everything to coalesce. It was hard to get everybody on that modern train. You know, you brought up the trains, and this is one of the kind of the trick, or this was the main tool I had to try to make sure I could get everybody together was the railroad. And I think the 2019 narrative is sort of symptomatic where we feel right now. We're all speeding on a doomed train. And to get all those characters on the train, it offered me the opportunity to not only connect it with the, you know, the development of the Transcontinental Railroad, but like the generations of Walter's family that had worked on the railroad. And I mean, the book was really all about creating a ton of connective tissue, because that's the theme of the book.
Right.
It's how we're all connected and we're all in this together. And so when I wrote it, I didn't just write each narrative and then put them together. I mean, I wrote it organically, almost as it finished. I mean, there's a little shuffling. And as I said, some characters went away, but it was important for me to write it that way because otherwise I'd be missing opportunities for connectivity. Things just sort of happen unconsciously. Associations get made, and you really have to be careful when you have 20 protagonists that there's going to be times where some of these characters are going to be off the page for 60, 70 pages at a time. And that's a big ask for the reader. You know, I needed the reader to be able to track the characters fluidly. I didn't want to have a persona dramatis at the beginning or a key where the reader had to stop reading and go, who is this? I needed them to track fluidly. That was the goal. And in order to do that, I had to create a system of connectivity that would allow me to bring the other characters into the reader's consciousness, even when they weren't part of that particular narrative, you know. And you do that through things like it could be geography, it could be theme, it could be genealogy. There's ten different layers to it. But I think that was the key to making it all hold together, was that sort of invisible, subtle connective tissue between everybody.
And I have to say, I don't know that my heart could have taken those 6 or 7 characters that you left on the cutting room floor.
Oh, gosh, you know something else? There was a point about halfway through the novel where I almost blew it up with a third generation of characters. I was going to add a 1918 to 1920, early 20s with the same genealogy. And boy, just in one night, I just sat there. I put it all on paper. I outlined it and I just sat there and drank beer and looked at my ping pong table with all those notes. And I said, you know what? It's just too much. And I think it was a wise decision. But I mean, in my mind, I could have blown it up for I'd love the challenge. But I think I arrived at a good balance, I hope, for the reader.
Well, for me, like I said, I tried to read it slowly and I just could not. Dare I say, you'll hear this from many other interviews that you're going to have today. It was a runaway train for me. I really had to like put the book down, go do something else. And then, well, what's going to happen? It was just really something else. So hopefully maybe at some point we'll see some of those other characters in other incarnations somewhere else.
I actually did take one character and write a whole novel with that line, already finished it, because it was one of my favorite characters. But the character just wasn't, like I said, working with the whole so much. And so I expanded on that story. I just couldn't let go of the character. And so, it's a little bit more of a Western, but we'll see. Yeah.
I am here for whatever you're going to do next. So,
well, God, I'd love you.
Whatever you need.
Thank you.
The readers are here, the patrons of the library are here, and you mentioned your website. Man, your website is the cat's meow with that craft beer menu for each of your titles. The only thing is, I couldn't like turn on a tap and have one of them.
I feel you. That's my friend Galen, a dear friend of mine who I met like 25 years ago because I bought a computer from him on Craigslist. It was my first Mac. And so he became my Mac expert. And so like for weeks after I bought the thing, it was a little buggy. I'm like, dude, he's like, oh, come over. And we become friends for, it's 25, 30 years now.
It's always nice to have that tech person who happens to be.
He won't take any money either. I mean, he'll let me buy him dinner and buy him, but he won't take any money or anything. I've been blessed with so many friends like that, that, you know, it's like, here, let me pay you, please, please. I want to pay you for your expertise. But he's just so nice that.
So the website is amazing. I will direct all of the listeners to that website for all of your upcoming events, which you have some amazing events upcoming. And I'm just going to tell readers to go there. We're running a little short on time. So I do want to say, any books you would like to recommend to readers that sort of wowed you over the last couple of years?
Well, you know, gosh, the books in my top of my head now are all a bunch of 19th century narratives. Like, I mean, books that like informed this book, and they're like big books in the canon, books like Grapes of Wrath or books like Great Expectations by Dickens or the USA trilogy by Dos Passos or Jane Eyre, or like the books that are on my mind right now are not really modern books, just because I don't know. These are the ones, since it's a historical novel, a lot of the books are on my mind. I mean, obviously, if there's anybody left that hasn't read Jason Mott's hell of a book, which just won the NBA, that was a great book. And what a wonderful guy he is too. So nice to mention my book on the Today Show and let me ride his coattails there. And he just such a really kind, generous dude.
I will post all of this information on the podcast page for this episode. Today's book, Small World, by today's guest, Jonathan Evason, is available right now. So please, listeners, grab a copy at your local library or please use your local independent bookstore. Small World is published by Dutton Press, an imprint of Penguin Random House. Jonathan Evason, I am bowled over, and I thank you so much for joining me and the listeners.
Jeez, Carolyn, I think I just grew a hat size. Thank you. I mean, you're giving me the juice to do a few more interviews here. I appreciate that.
Anytime you need that infusion, you just...
Oh, that's a daily, believe me. I mean, my life is, I got three kids. My life is an exercise in humiliation most of the time. So music to my ears, I appreciate it. Don't worry, it won't really go to my head, but thank you so much.
And I hope whatever comes next, that you will consider us and come back to Top Shelf, because the listeners and the readers, we all just love you.
Anytime.
Oh, that's amazing. Remember, listeners, to follow Top Shelf at Merrick Library on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you find most podcasts. For the latest and the greatest at the Merrick Library, check out our website, merricklibrary.org. Special thanks, as always, to Merrick Library Director Dan Chusmier, Assistant Director Diane Bondi, and the Merrick Library Board of Directors for getting us off the ground and on to the airwaves. Until the next time, remember to keep us on your top shelf.